I'm Farai Chidea.
And I'm John Hockenberry. And from looking through at the world through a fish's eyes, let's think about it now through a virus's eyes, all right? I mean, with all the stories of swine flu and the idea of a possible pandemic and what would be the vectors of transmission of a virus, we thought it would be best to think in terms of what if we could shrink ourselves down and inject ourselves into human beings and see what the world looked like then.
You are going where no man or camera has ventured before. And when you come out, you may never look at yourself in the same way again.
The cheesy trailer of the movie Fantastic Voyage from 1966.
Which shows people swimming through the bloodstream.
Raquel Welch.
Yeah.
And Stephen Boyd. Yes, indeed. A fabulous, geeky movie way back in 1966. But for viruses, these are the best of times. Maybe the worst of times for humans, but for viruses, the best of times. In a 6 billion plus person world, Dr. Susan Fischer-Hawk, epidemiologist at the University of Texas School of Public Health, and thanks for joining us. It's a great time to be a virus, don't you think?
Well, yes, depending on which virus you are. But, you know, I like your piece of music. That's pretty accurate for the virus.
And you know, there are so many hosts, if you're talking about human beings. From a virus perspective, are they looking at pigs and birds and humans and going, you know what, I'll take the humans?
Well, it depends on what number they've got. If it's an influenza virus, it needs a specific receptor to get into a human or a bird. And there are two different receptors there, but the pig's got both of those receptors. So that's how the pig comes into the picture.
Is it a myth to think that the proliferation of the population of potential hosts proves to be a boon for viruses, and that as the population of hosts grows, the proliferation of viruses also increases?
Oh, absolutely. It's the large number of people that are available to influenza viruses that may be influencing the increase of strains of viruses that we see circulating.
And how does it affect, you know, different kinds of species? I mean, we talk a lot about swine, avian, and human influenza viruses because they have so many problems that they produce in humans, including the fatalities that we've been discussing this week and another one we learned overnight. But do viruses also, you know, concentrate on animals that are even more populous, more numerous than humans, insects, for instance?
Yes, there are viruses of plants, insects, and almost even there are even viruses of bacteria. There's a very large world out there. But generally, viruses are pretty species-specific, which means that one virus is adapted for a certain species, and that's more or less how it carries on.
So are we going to be hearing more and more of these kinds of stories of potential pandemics and, you know, fears of fatalities as the years proceed because of the proliferation of the human population and our ability to communicate and transmit?
Well, possibly. I think we're hearing more about it is the difference. Maybe that's the word, because this has happened forever, in fact. Probably whenever we had a large enough population for viruses to get around so easily. We hadn't had a flu pandemic since 1968, so we were kind of overdue. We used to think they came every 10 years, but we haven't had one since then. So it's not too much of a surprise to a virologist.
You know, I'm fascinated. You talked about how species-specific viruses usually are, and of course this one is not. And the avian flu was something that that people were all panicked about a couple years ago. What's the status of that?
It's still out there. It's still out there, and it's still doing exactly what it was before. It's circulating in birds, particularly domestic poultry. Very difficult to eradicate, and it's occasionally infecting humans. But the avian influenza virus doesn't have the receptor or the receptor numbers to match human respiratory tract, and it would take a mutation or two for that to happen. When it does, that's going to be quite a problem.
You know, from the perspective of a virus again, and I'm, you know, obviously ascribing way too many human traits to a virus, but, I mean, if I were a virus— And I see every time I infect a human, like the world goes insane and they come up with all these countermeasures like Tamiflu. I would say, you know, I'm going to stay over here in the birds and the pigs. I'm going to leave the humans alone. And indeed, the statistics of a pandemic for humans are going down, not up. We haven't had ones for 10 years since the 1960s.
It's just a question of lottery. To tell you exactly what will happen next, it would be rather like going to Las Vegas and playing every machine I could and trying to predict which one would give me the jackpot. It's totally random mutations in the virus, and thousands and millions of mutations. It mutates every time it replicates. And each time it mutates, it makes a mistake. And it makes a mistake, and usually those mistakes are fatal to the virus. But very, very occasionally, those mistakes are advantageous. And so it decides, okay, this new strain, this one works better. Look, I'm resistant to Tamiflu. So that strain then takes over. It's like you're watching evolution as it happens.
Hmm. And is there any sort of incentive for the virus to be benign to the host, in the sense that killing the host doesn't really help the virus propagate, in the end?
Absolutely. In fact, the biggest success for a virus is not to kill the host. There are just one or two extraordinary exceptions, and one of those is rabies. But mostly the virus does much better if it's relatively symbiotic or at least benign in the host, so that it just sort of sits there, replicates, moves on to the next host, and makes lots of little viruses.
So from the perspective of a virus, it's can't we all just get along, right? Right, Dr. Hawk?
Well, no, once again, it's a question of it's random mutations. It's a question of chance. It makes so many changes, and there's no planning as far as the virus is concerned. It just uses the fact that it can change so rapidly to take advantage of a new niche or to overcome some adversity, such as the use of Tamiflu.
A virus view of the world from Dr. Susan Fisher Hawk, epidemiologist at the University of Texas School of Public Health. She's also co-author of the book Level 4, Virus Hunters of the CDC. She joined us from South Padre Island in Texas. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.